Several years ago, my eyes were opened to the existence of gangs and gang-related violence on the reservations in northern Minnesota. I recently had the opportunity to talk with Anton Troyer, an author, professor, and Ojibwe, about the appeal of gangs to Native youth. Why is that happening?
Yeah, well, I don't think anybody's got that 100% figured out. From where I sit, I think all human beings have an intrinsic desire to be accepted, to know that it's okay to be me, and someone's got my back. And there are healthy ways to meet that need. I think it's important to acknowledge, too, that cultural institutions don't evolve nearly as rapidly as people. And so, for example, cultural institutions like the Lutheran Church struggle to maintain their numbers with young parishioners because the institution seems stodgy and conservative, and to some people seems like it is preaching morality without necessarily providing genuine spiritual connection. Ironically, something that people sense might be more easily accessed through indigenous ceremony. Mm-hmm. And this has been a problem with all cultures throughout time. Those institutions will not change very fast, but people and the broader lived culture will change much more quickly as technology and other things. And so the human need to belong, to know that you're part of a community, that someone has your back, if the existing choices for having that, for finding that, feel like they don't fit, then people look elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So there are still other healthy ways to find that sense of belonging and so forth. People find it in, you know, any number of community offerings and opportunities, and it's not just around faith communities, it's around political action or environmental awareness, you know, where people find an affinity and say, okay, you know, these people get it, they're cool, I want to actually spend time with them and go have coffee or something like that.
Yeah, or their art community or whatever
right,
it is.
Right. Mm-hmm. So there are healthy ones. But I think it's important to remember that for a lot of people who are not from the majority cultural group, then any of the cultural offerings in the majority cultural group may not resonate, right? Mm-hmm. So just while you could tell a disaffected white teenager that there are healthy opportunities in the Muslim faith community, it may not resonate and they may not feel supported or encouraged in participating in that, even if it meets all of those other criteria for feeling safe and knowing someone's got your back and belonging to part of a group and whatnot. So it's not hard to understand that what works for one person might not work for everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, for Indigenous people, for Black Americans, for Hispanics to some degree too, you know, what there is in mainstream America is often seen as a colonial regime that was out to hurt them, has done lots of damage. So why would they pick up anything that some white American thinks is so healthy and helpful and wonderful? Are we going to do the coup de grace in our own assimilation? And so what's left? And then you look around, like inside an indigenous community, for example, and what is there? And there are healthy, beautiful, wonderful ceremonies and cultural practices and so forth. But accessing them is not as easy as you might imagine. You know, like there are a lot of people who harvest wild rice, and it's a really cool practice. But to harvest wild rice, you need a canoe and a push pole and knockers and somebody to show you what to do.
And a car to get to the
lake. And a car to get
lake,
there, or right? And access to a lake.
Yeah.
And so what happens is that it's doesn't seem nearly as accessible to people as you might imagine. We do have a language and ceremonies and cultural practices, but for a lot of young people, it seems like there's a few scattered elders, and who do I go to? And no one's opening the doors. And it just seems so much easier to do something else.
Yeah.
You know? And then you have all of these other overlapping things that drive problems in any community, poverty, prevalent substance abuse, and so forth. And if someone's there saying, hey, why don't you come hang out with us? That seems approachable, accessible, mm-hmm. and available, and provides some affinity. And people aren't getting involved with something like a gang thinking, I want to go ruin my life.
Right.
But it starts meeting some of this initial human need, and things sometimes spiral out of hand before anyone can recalibrate or get any kind of help, coaching, or just see an accessible alternative. And so I imagine that those are some of the things that get people started on a bad path. And interrupting it, those who would like to interrupt it have spent most of their time just incarcerating everybody. Even those who really care, they're like, well, let's make safe streets and let's stop and frisk in communities of color. And we have horrible disparities that are going on in our justice system. You know, 75% of the kids in Northwest Juvenile Training Center in Bemidji are Native American kids. And Native Americans are 22% of the city of Bemidji. So are Native kids like literally 20 times more criminally minded than everyone else? And I don't think so. I think what you have is a series of overlapping variables. And the system is not, I think for all of our citizens, the system is not successfully reducing recidivism. It's not successfully helping people heal and reconcile with their home, cultural community, healing lifeway, whatever. Mm-hmm. It is just providing punishments. And ultimately, that increases the burden to society. It increases the us-them feeling and perception about those who are on a certain level, certainly trying to make a healthier society, right? Let's keep bad people away from everyone else. But none of that is going to reduce the rate of participation in gangs and gang-related violence. It actually has to do with healing individuals and communities. And to do that, we kind of got to get on the same page, and we have to build up and strengthen some of the healthy alternatives rather than just punish everyone. And that doesn't mean that I don't want criminals in jail or something like that. But I think we need to be really careful about how we approach these sorts of issues.
Anton Troyer is a professor of Ojibwe language and culture at Bemidji State University. He's written 14 books on Native life, history, and culture. And he organizes and facilitates a monthly Truth and Reconciliation Forum. Truth and Reconciliation meetings take place the first Tuesday of every month at the American Indian Resource Center on the Bemidji State University campus. Those meetings run from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., and everyone is welcome to attend.
Well, as a child, I mostly spoke inside my head. I had conversations with the clowns, the dogs, the dead. And they thought me broken, that my tongue was coated lead. But I just couldn't make my words make sense to them. If you only listen with your ears, I can't get in. And I spend my evenings pulling stars out of the sky. And I'd arrange them on the lawn where I would lie. Taste the dreams of distant lives, and I would dress myself up in them through the night, while my folks would sleep in separate beds, and wonder why. Thank you. ghost atop my chair. My dad considered me a cross he had to bear. And in my head I'd sing apologies and stare as my mom would hang the clothes across the line. And she would try to keep the empty from her eyes. So then one afternoon I dressed myself alone.